White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and students of the International Jew. It is May 23rd, 2013, and I am Carolyn Yeager, and
I am Hadding Scott.
And we're your hosts tonight, as we always are, and we're beginning Volume 3 tonight of the International Jew with a long chapter. Of course, it's there's four volumes to this great classic, and I'd like to just make a brief comment summing up Volumes 1 and 2, because we have a long chapter tonight. Chapter 43 is one of the longest ones we've come across. So I don't want to take up too much time. But, you know, I think that the main message for me is something that's very obvious and that doesn't really even need mentioning, but is that organized Jewry exercises enormous power in this country, the United States of America, and it becomes more brazen and entrenched all the time, as a matter of fact, since they were writing this book. Henry Ford and his writers were writing this book. It's gotten only worse, and they're pointing out how bad it was then. So this must be relayed to the common people, especially white people, soon. You know, if we're going to survive, that's my opinion, because I've been reading some stories recently that, like the one with Vice President Biden telling us how wonderful it is that the Jews were can be given the honor of having changed attitudes about gay marriage in the United States and gay people. And you know, when the vice president does that, it's just, of course, he's a goon and an idiot. But
you mean
still,
gay
that's
people.
What we've got.
He's talking about perverts.
Yeah, we're talking about homosexuals.
Oh, perverts. Okay.
but you know, I don't usually use that word, but he did use it. And it was just amazing to me, you know, and I've seen things like that, quite a few of them recently. And I'm just like, wow, you know, we're so far gone here. So, that makes this message that we're giving here all the more important. So anyway, you can say what you want or just start reading our new chapter.
Alrighty. All right. I'm supposed to read the preface to Volume 3. The present volume, third in the series, is compiled for the same purpose as its predecessors, to enable new readers of the Dearborn Independent to commence their reading with the earlier articles in the series of studies in the Jewish question. It was inevitable that the publication first to open the discussion of this question should be compelled to meet the degrading charge of antisemitism and kindred falsehoods. But it was also inevitable that if the work of such a publication should prove to be valid, the way would be cleared for discussion by other publications, which had not and need not bring upon themselves the charge of racial hatred. This is precisely what has occurred. An undreamed of publicity for the essentials of the Jewish question has been achieved in this country. It is noteworthy that whether the publicity be in agreement with or against the Dearborn Independent, the essential facts are the same, and these facts were first set forth in this paper. That indeed constitutes the strength of the articles. The facts are provable. They are not disprovable. The reader can confirm the facts from his own observation. With regard to the matters discussed in these volumes, there are too many observers of the Jew to permit misstatements to pass. This also constitutes the dilemma of the self-appointed defenders of the Jews. They may abuse the Dearborn Independent, but they cannot disprove the facts. They do not make even an impressive denial of them. The whole situation would be much clarified if Jewish spokesmen would use frankness instead of a fusillade of cheap and irrelevant abuse. The year has witnessed...
How long is this? I don't even have that.
It's a couple pages.
Oh, you
the year has
I was thinking of this little thing, this little quote ahead of
us. Yes, that's after the preface.
Okay, well, go ahead.
The year has witnessed... Yeah, no stopping now.
All right.
The year has witnessed much noticeable discussion of the Jewish question in magazines of quality. A few have descended to whitewashing. Fewer still to sheer pro-Jewish propaganda. But such articles as those in the September Century, those in the Atlantic for February, May, and July, the 19th Century and after for April, the true and admirable accounts by Lieutenant Commander Hugo W. Kühler of the U.S. Navy in The World's Work for July, August, September, and October, World's Work. These testify to the reality of the matter. The more serious religious press, as represented by publications like the Christian Standard, the Christian Century, the Moody Monthly, which is published by the Moody Bible Institute Chicago, have also added materially to the literature of the question. In editorial vision and liberty of discussion, the religious press has shown itself to be freer of control than has the secular press. This volume... Okay.
My little clap there, applause, all right.
Well, you're saying they're not motivated primarily by money, that's the thing. At least they're not supposed to be.
Well, they probably feel more strongly about it, too, because there were a lot of what was going on then was defending Christianity against the Jewish attacks. That was a big part of their attack then. They hadn't gotten to sexual perverts yet. That was in the future. Sorry.
This volume contains information dealing with the influence of the Jewish idea on American life. The departments of life here studied do not by any means exhaust the list. The studies are more and more centering on the actual operations of the Jewish program upon the American people and the effect of Jewish conceptions on our common life. These studies are appearing in the Dearborn Independent now. They will be gathered into future volumes as may be required. November 1921. So
that was written in November 1921.
That's what it says, anyway.
And this, we just finished up with January 1921. So what the heck? This one it says it's 11 June 1921, the one we're reading. Kind of strange dates here.
So it's a few months. The articles had to be published before they could put out a compilation, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So here we go with chapter 43. The Jews and the religious persecution cry. We cheerfully give the Jews of the United States credit for knowing.
Okay, so you don't want to read that little, we don't have to.
Well, I had to pass several pages to get to the essay here, and I went right past it. You want to read that?
How important it is. It's a letter that they got from a Jew. And he wrote, "Gentlemen, because you believe..." This is one of these old-fashioned kind of writing. "Because you believe in a good cause," said Dr. Johnson. He's quoting Dr. Johnson. Who's that famous Dr. Johnson? "Because you believe in a good cause, there's no reason why you should feel called upon to defend it, for by your manner of defense you may do your cause much harm." That is, if you defend in the wrong way, like probably a lot of people think I do, I'm doing more harm than good or something like that. But anyway, he says to them, "The above applying to me, I will only say that I have received the books you sent me and read both with much interest. You are rendering the Jews a very great service, that of saving them from themselves. It takes courage and nerve and intelligence to do and pursue such a work, and I admire you for it." So here's somebody who sees that the Jews are a big problem for themselves, and that if they would take heed to what what's our friend's name here now? I'm thinking of David Irving for some reason. God Almighty. Henry Ford. If they would take heed of Henry Ford, you know, they would, it would do them well. But you see, all these people are still trying to think that they can create some kind of reasonable body out of these Jews. And I'm of the opinion that that was, wasn't possible then, and now we know even more that it's not, it's never going to be possible.
Well, shoot, even Moses had to break the tablet in half.
Yeah.
All right. So here we go with chapter 43, Jews, or excuse me, the Jews, and the rely, or excuse me, discombobulated, the Jews and the religious persecution cry. We cheerfully give the Jews of the United States credit for knowing when they are getting their money's worth. In the defense that has been set up for them, they know that they have not had their money's worth, neither from Jewish money collectors nor from the Gentile fronts to whom the money has been paid. The Lewis Marshall line of defense has broken down. The boycott has dribbled into nothingness. Speeches in Chicago, excuse me, speeches in Congress and editorials in newspapers have sounded too hollow to carry conviction. The question has proved itself far too big for those who have entered the defense for gain, to satisfy personal grudges, or to win what they feel would be the favor of the stronger side. The Jews long ago quit the course which some of the Gentile fronts still continue. The Jews recognized the futility of it.
They quit what course here? They quit the course. They quit doing what here?
Huh. Well, he mentions an attempted boycott.
Yeah.
And he also, a little farther on, he mentions... complaining that the international Jew amounts to religious persecution.
Well, it says the Lewis Marshall line of defense is broken down. So I guess they're, you know, they're complaining about a lot of things, but that it's not working, and a lot of Jews have quit doing that, considering that it's not working. All right.
Well, it makes the Jews look bad if they're complaining all the time.
Right. Although, you know what? They're still doing it. They didn't actually give up.
They have some silly goy to do their complaining for them.
Yeah, right.
No intelligent Jew in the United States ever was asinine enough to declare that the Jewish question is a religious question, and that the Dearborn Independence investigation of that question constituted religious persecution. No Jew known beyond the next street has ever ventured such a silly charge. But it is apparently all that remains for the Gentile fronts to shout about. From what can be learned of them, they are for the most part men of no religion themselves, and they use the term religious persecution as a red rag, which
flag.
They think...
red flag.
It says rag here.
Really?
Red rag.
Wow.
Waving the bloody shirt.
You know, I couldn't find what I got it from before. I'm still on that same archive.org, but I was taking it from the kind of the raw copy that they have the whole thing in, because I couldn't copy and paste well from the PDF, and they didn't have, I thought they had another one before, a regular different copy, but so we might have a little bit of differences. I've already noticed a couple words that I thought were different from what you said. Okay.
It
red,
is rather
red flag or flag. Red, sorry, red flag
red
or
rag.
Red flag.
Red waving the bloody shirt, I think.
Yeah.
It is rather curious how the cry of religious persecution is used to evoke the spirit of persecution against alleged persecutors.
Well, they're turning it around. Yeah, that's what they're saying.
The Dearborn Independent this week goes out of its course to squelch once and for all this cry of religious persecutions. Three statements are sufficient to outline the situation. First, neither directly nor by implication has the Dearborn Independent held that the Jewish question is a religious question. On the contrary, supported by the highest Jewish authority, this paper has held that the Jewish question is one of race and nationality. See issues of October 9th and 16th, 1920, reprinted in the new book, Volume 2 of The International Jew. Second, there is no religious persecution of the Jew in the United States, unless the agitation of various humane societies for the abolition of kosher killing may be considered such. The Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals has published a valuable study of the Jewish method of slaughtering animals for food, in which is adduced much scientific evidence to support the conclusion that the Jewish method is needlessly cruel. But even this can only with difficulty be stretched into an interference with the religion of the Jews. The Jewish method of slaughter, as now practiced, is not commanded in the Old Testament, but in the Talmud, and is therefore not religious in the authoritative sense, but traditional. Moreover, there is positive evidence that modern methods achieve the Jewish purpose, the disposal of the blood of the carcass, much better than does the Jewish method. This is the only instance where even remotely the religion of the Jews has been touched.
And now, you know, that they're still doing it. And you think after all of the attention that has been given and how that affects people, excuse me, how that affects non-Jewish people and all these animal lovers and so on. And yet that just shows, that just shows how effective these Jews are, that no matter how vulnerable they are in what they're doing, you can't get the power to stop them. They always get to continue on. Same with their circumcision.
I believe some European countries have recently outlawed kosher slaughter.
Well, they're trying to do it, but they're running into all kinds of problems. I don't know if any have actually done so. You? I don't know that they've succeeded.
I think Germany did it. I think a judge ruled over it.
Oh, wait,
that was circumcision.
That was a judge, and that was overruled anyway. You know, that was a judge in Cologne. Well, that's what I mean. They raise a fuss, and they have access to the highest people in the government, and they always, nothing is ever able to make any headway against these people. And these things, if we had more workers working at this, should be, should be talked about more and with the emphasis of this kind of power these people have. And trying to put down their power, like some people do, like you at times, and who was my guest, Tom Metzger, he was doing that. A lot of these people do that. Don't overrate their power. They're not that powerful. Well, they seem to be. I think they are. Okay.
Well, I would agree with Rockwell that Jews owe their power mainly to the fact that there's no organized challenge to them. You know.
Well, we should organize it, and you're right. People are afraid. It's just pathetic. It's pathetic. It has to be why? Because while there's plenty of attempts made over the many years, they're not up to the power that they have. They're not up to the strength of what the Jews have.
Third, the fact is that while there is no religious persecution of the Jews, there is very much real religious persecution by the Jews. That is one of the outstanding characteristics of organized Jewish life in the United States. It's active, unceasing, powerful, and virulent attacks upon any and all forms of Christianity which may chance to come to public notice. Now and again we hear of outbreaks of sectarian bigotry between Catholics and Protestants, but these are not to be compared with the steady, relentless, alert anti-Christian activity of the Jewish organizations.
Now, I just have to stick in here, you know, the question, can this be simply evolutionary psychology? I don't, we're not required to give any, we can talk about this on Monday night, but can this be, you know, can they carry out stuff like this simply because they all kind of think alike because, you know, the way they've evolved? I would say no.
Well, in the case of Christianity, it's because the Christian religion is kind of a direct assault on Judaism.
Well, okay. Well, save it. We'll save it for later.
There are doctrinal disputes within the Christian churches, but none that challenge the basis of Christianity itself. Organized Judaism, however, is not content with doctrinal disputation, but enlists its vast commercial and political power against everything that it regards as, in its own words, Christological manifestations. Now, these are facts, and being facts, they are important, and they ought to be publicly known. No president of the United States has yet dared to take his inaugural oath on the open pages of the New Testament. The Jews would denounce him. When General Pershing announced that he considered the morale of the American soldier due to the interest of the Christian men and women at home, the Jews had him cut out the word Christian. Various governors of American states, having used the word Christian in their Thanksgiving proclamations, have been obliged to excise it on demand of the Jews. The word Christian was compelled to be cut out of the officer's training manual at the Plattsburgh training camp. Everything that would remind the child in school that he is living in the midst of a Christian civilization, in a nation declared by its Supreme Court to be founded on Christian principles, has been ordered out of the public schools on Jewish demand. People sometimes ask why 3 million Jews can control the affairs of 100 million Americans, in the same way that 10 Jewish students can abolish the mention of Christmas and Easter out of schools containing 3,000 Christian pupils.
That's an excellent point.
Yes. Yeah, people, you know, they have this quantitative thinking because that's the way democratic ideology encourages people to think.
Right.
You know, one man, one vote, everybody has the same amount of power. It doesn't really work that way. Everything depends on your position and being organized.
Yeah, and you got 3,000 kids, say, in a school, Christians, and these Jews can stop anything Christian because it offends their ten of them.
In a nation and at a time when a minority of Jews can print every year a record of the apologies they have extorted from public officials for having inadvertently used the term Christian, it is desirable that this charge of religious persecution should be placed where it belongs. In the Daily American Tribune, a Catholic daily published at Dubuque, Iowa, appeared a recent headline which said a great deal. Not persecution of the Jews, but protection of the Christians. it is now proposed to let the Jews speak for themselves on this question. The Jewish press has been searched for an authoritative expression charging that the study of the Jewish question constitutes religious persecution, and none has been found. That cry has been reserved for the Gentile fronts for use among the Christians. All the attacks from the Jewish camp are against the doctrines and institutions of the Christians. They have carried on an insistent and successful persecution, and the details of it have filled the Jewish press for years past. Upon reading the following selections, the remark of Dean Swift will probably come to mind. Not sure who that is, really. We are fully convinced that we shall always tolerate them, but not that they will tolerate us.
Yeah, it's time to stop tolerating them. That's another good message from me.
The Red Cross is objectionable to the Jew. H. Lissauer, in the Jewish Times, proposed that the Magen David be substituted for the Red Cross on the Red Cross Society badges worn by Jews.
Yeah, and the Magen David is the Star of David.
Yeah.
They can't even, and you know, that really struck me because I think, well, what's wrong with the Red Cross? I mean, they use it. But then I thought, oh, it's the cross. They can't stand that cross. That's it.
We should not let our sensitiveness to charges of intolerance overcome our conscientious religious objections to the cross, says Mr. Lissauer.
The editor of the Jewish Independent thinks the suggestion is worthy of serious consideration. The Gideons are objectionable to the Jew. The Gideons is the name given to the Christian Commercial Travelers Association of America, whose efforts are responsible for the Bibles, which are to be found in most hotel rooms. This is from the Cleveland Jewish Independent.
It is quite evident that the Gideons do not know a typically Jewish name when they see or hear one. The Gideons' object, according to their letterheads, is winning commercial traveling men for Christ. And the way this is done is by placing a Christian Bible in every guest room of each hotel. The Gideons have been at it a long time, long enough to know better. But the other day, they sent a letter to Max Cohen of this city, who is a traveling man, but the kind the Gideons have no right to ask for funds. And the person who selected him for an easy mark certainly should have had better sense. Mr. Cohen utterly failed to fall for the invitation, and instead of sending his little donation, he wrote a letter to the secretary, C.A. Johnson, in which he bluntly said, "Don't you think you ought to use better judgment than to ask me to contribute to a strictly religious work opposite to my own belief? If the Gideons insist upon filling up hotels with Bibles that have no business there, they should go to the right persons for contributions."
That's so amazing. You know, and it's interesting that he said that that the Christian Bible works opposite to his own belief. So they see Christianity as opposing them, and so they oppose it, I guess, like you
said. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Christianity is universalist, and Judaism is tribalist.
Well, I don't think that's the opposition that they're talking about. You know, it's not universalist everywhere.
Well, you can look at it
universalist.
As Jesus, you know, being the whole issue, I suppose. But there's more to it than that, really.
Yeah, well, there's one thing is what it was, and another thing is what it's a way it's seen today. Even different from what it was at the time that this was written. It's even gotten more, it's even changed somewhat more, but it was, you know. Anyway, okay.
The Jews do not like the Salvation Army, nor the YMCA. Young Men's Christian Association.
Right.
Many thousands of printed lines expressed the fury with which they regarded attempts to Christianize the Army and Navy during the war, and the wild arguments with which they sought to make the Y work, or sought to make Y work and Salvation Army work, appear to be a violation of the principle of no union of church and state. The same objection was made to religious welfare during the building of the Panama Canal. If there is any challenge of this on the part of uninformed Gentile fronts, since the Jews themselves will not challenge it, the evidence can be produced. It is only a matter of space. The Jews did not like Theodore Roosevelt's choice of a hymn for the Progressive Party. With Honorable Oscar S. Strauss as the nominee for the governorship of New York on the Progressive ticket, this question rises. Will the voters on the east side of New York march to the Progressive battle hymn, Onward Christian Soldiers, or will the song have to be changed to fit the candidate, says the American Israelite? And of course, the Roosevelts probably are partially of Jewish descent themselves.
Yeah. So Theodore Roosevelt used Onward Christian Soldiers as his political song for his campaign.
Well, that's what it says. That's not really surprising. I mean, the Onward Christian Soldiers was used pretty heavily in Second World War propaganda, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, war propaganda. You're telling the Christians to go fight for you. Why would a Jew complain about that?
Yeah, it just goes to show.
Onward Christian Soldiers, go!
Yeah, right. But they have to, anything they can find, you know, they do, and particularly as they're pointing out here, how anything Christian is particularly what they were going after then.
The Jews hate with a malice beyond expression what they call mission holes, that is, a place of instruction maintained by Christian churches, where inquiring Jews may learn what Christianity is, and in many instances, where destitute and neglected Jews may receive assistance and counsel. The boast of how the Jew cares for his own is given a jolt by the dire need which has called Christian welfare work into Jewish settlements. This hatred overrode good judgment so completely that in 1911, Assemblyman Hayman introduced into the New York State Legislature a bill making it an offense punishable by fine or imprisonment to entice or tempt a minor under 16 years of age into a religious mission, Sunday school, or church without the written consent of the parents or guardian of the minor.
Well, that didn't get very far, I'm sure, but he introduced it anyway.
The language indicates a part of the contempt in which the welfare work undertaken by Christian institutions for the neediest class of children in America is held by the leaders among the Jews. Not by the masses of the Jews themselves, however, except when they are terrified by their leaders. That's a rather optimistic appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
In St. Louis, application for a charter of the Jewish Christian Association was opposed. The converted Jews wanted an association of their own. They represented that they had been ostracized by the Jews and were desirous of organizing and owning their own meeting place. A referee advised against the charter on the ground that it would be contrary to the broad spirit of religious freedom guaranteed under the Constitution of Missouri. The referee was, of course, coached by Jews. In the name of religious freedom, these Jews opposed giving an association freedom enough to preach the gospel. In Toronto, the Jewish leaders issued a proclamation throughout all Toronto, Jewry, forbidding the use of reading rooms, baths, dispensaries, motion picture shows, or anything else which they described as the petty bribery of conversionist tricksters who seek for their wealthy donators to open the gates of heaven and find salvation for their sins by converting a weak-minded Jew. By the way, all converted Jews are weak-minded or criminal, if we are to believe the hundreds of statements to that effect in the Jewish papers. The Jews are, without exception, superior people, until they become Christians. Then they learn what they are from their Jewish leaders. Among the nice names for this welfare work are Jesus Holes, Mission Traps, Jew Snatchers, Child Stealers. It happened that one of the helpers in the Chicago Gospel Mission was a principal of a Chicago public school. The Jews raised a great outcry against him, denounced him as unfit to teach children and guilty of the moral turpitude of eating food provided by taxes of which a large share is received from Jews, whose children they seek to entice from their parental religion and whose men and women they are seeking to degrade into liars and hypocrites. All because a competent man was willing to meet Jewish inquirers, or perhaps bring a few of the benefits of civilization into the neglected ghetto. If this schoolteacher were Christian enough to have a conscience, he would resign, said the Jewish thunderers. And with that never-failing tinge of dark-mindedness, they added, what is done in secret in these haunts can, of course, only be guessed at.
But, you know, these Jews that are everywhere and on these panels and so on, on these committees and so on, they're not talking like that. And this is the more insidious thing, that if all Jews were so Jewy, we would have a sense that they were different and we shouldn't, you know, be listening to them or whatever. But when they just fit in and sound and look like the rest of us, of the Jewish religion, and they're speaking up for their, whatever. I don't know what they can call them, actually, religious rights. As though they don't have their religious rights, they do. Then they get people to go along with them because they seem so normal. I wish they did all talk like you're talking.
Well, the Jews of the future will be very Jewy, because the more affluent and assimilated Jews don't have enough children to replace themselves, while the ultra-Orthodox Jews in Israel, who are a bunch of welfare bums that refuse to serve in the defense forces, they have huge numbers of children. So that's the future of world Jewry right there. A bunch of Jewy-Jew welfare bums.
Well, world Jew, well, if they're welfare bums, they're not going to have too much influence.
They're in decline.
Yeah.
Through dysgenic breeding.
Oh, you're another one. We got nothing to worry about, huh?
Well,
they're just going to do themselves in. We're going to do ourselves in before
stupidity of our own people.
Yeah, we're going to do ourselves in.
Propaganda. This business of dysgenic breeding is a long-term solution. In the short term, we've got huge problems. Talk about bigotry. This is from a people who encourage the cry that the Dearborn Independent is engaged in religious persecution, though the Dearborn Independent has not yet carried even one of the scores of sensational and important stories which show the federal government discovering synagogues and rabbis as agents of the illicit liquor traffic. These haunts and hints of the things that may go on there is the only way the American Israelite can find to refer to welfare works in which some of the best people, from no motive but the goodness in their hearts, engage. A book of 500 pages could be filled with the unreasonable and, in many cases, positively vicious statements of leading Jews on any of the subjects touched here. The Jews do not like the Christian Sabbath. The literature of attack against this institution is voluminous and the arguments extreme. Sunday is Christian, therefore to the Jew it is taboo. Court records in every state bear testimony to the fight of the Jews against Sunday. Few legislatures have escaped being pestered with bills on the subject. The latest fight has been the strongest yet waged to destroy Sunday by throwing it wide open to Jewish exploitation. Yet the Jews are most chary of their own Sabbath. When recent college examinations fell on Jewish holy days, the Jews had the examinations changed. When primary elections fell last year on Jewish days, every power was moved to change them. There are Jewish records of a Western governor being remonstrated with because a condemned criminal was sentenced to be hanged on Saturday. Did the governor mean to offend 3 million Jews? The St. Louis Charity Fair in 1908 planned to remain open on Friday evening. A great outcry. Did the managers of that fair mean to insult the Jews? Didn't they know that the Jewish Sabbath began on Friday night? But when it is a question of maintaining the integrity of Sunday, poo-poo. Don't the Christians know that Sunday perpetuates the silliest superstition that their God Jesus rose from the dead?
When wow, did somebody write that?
That's what it says.
I know, it has it there, but it doesn't say where it came from.
When certain people aid the post office employees in an attempt to close the post offices on Sunday, the Jews regard it as a step back toward the Dark Ages. Here is a Jewish editorial relating to Governor Cox. It appears that Governor Cox in 1914 stood for a decent Sunday and liquor law enforcement. And this is the threat that held out to him. This is the threat held out to him.
Now, he's governor of what? Was he governor of New York or what are they talking about here? St. Louis? Somewhere?
Ohio.
Oh, Ohio. Okay.
Okay. At the 59th Jackson Day banquet of the Wayne County, Ohio Democracy, which was held at Worcester, Governor Cox made the principal address in which he defended laws passed at his instigation. The governor laid particular stress on the fact that for the first time in her history, Ohio now enjoys a Christian Sabbath. I stand or fall by the Christian Sabbath in the next campaign, the governor is reported to have said. There are many who construe the declaration to mean that Governor Cox has bid defiance to the liberal element of the state and will rely upon the religious and class prejudices which he is arousing and keeping alive in the rural districts to re-elect him to his present office. Or, what is clearly plain from his entire attitude, boost him into the nomination for United States senatorship. The Israelite will take great pleasure about the time the leaves begin to turn in reminding Governor Cox of his statement that he will stand or fall by a Christian Sabbath in the coming campaign.
The American Israelite.
Well, I wonder how he did.
The literature of Jewish thought towards Sunday presents complete evidence of the leader's antagonism to this distinctly Christian and Anglo-Saxon institution. Sunday has never been regarded as set apart in those countries where the Jewish idea has most infiltrated. The decline of Sunday in the United States is directly along the line of those invasions of the Sunday spirit, which are mostly aligned with Jewish commercial interests. In Great Britain and her colonies, where the Jew is not permitted to usurp a superior place as a chief censor of morals and religion and education, Sunday is decently observed. The situation in this country is that, instead of enjoying its liberty, the Jewish leaders have taken liberties. The student who wishes to know how deep and hard set is the anti-Sunday program will find all the material he wants in Jewish sources. The theme of this article is religious prejudice. You will not find it anywhere within the whole range of the Jewish question except on the Jewish side. There is, in the United States, a religious prejudice, but it is strictly Yiddish. If the Christian population bothered 1/100,000th part as much about Jewish religion as the Jews bother about Christian observances, the whole fabric of Talmudical teaching would be consumed in the bright light to which general attention would bring it, the bright light from which it has always been concealed. Sheer analysis in the interest of mental health, if undertaken by 50 men, would compel the Jewish people by their own decision to abandon the darkness which holds them now. Jewish Talmudism owes its existence today to the indifference with which it is regarded. This is the far opposite extreme of religious persecution.
It's pretty amazing that nobody ever tells the Jews what to do about their religion or in their religion. And some of it is so outrageously horrible that if you bring it up, you know, then they go bananas, like with the circumcision thing and so on. You know, this is our traditions and our religion and blah, blah, blah. And yet, as they say, they're constantly criticizing and complaining what other religions are doing, particularly, of course, the Christians. It's just amazing that people don't see that in that way and say, what's going on here? And dislike it, you know, enough to start talking about it.
The list of headlines describing the various angles of Jewish anti-Christian religious prejudice is not, however, exhausted. The Jew is prejudiced against the Bible. When he uses that term, he does not mean what the ordinary person means. Therefore, he does what he can to destroy public honor of the book, unless it can be an occasion where a president has been inaugurated, when it will run through the Jewish press like a strong breeze, that once more has a Christian statesman ignored the Christian Bible and turned to the Jewish Bible. It is rather a trifling matter to mention. Its significance comes solely from the light it throws on the Jewish attitude. It is not a trifling thing in Jewry, as the country will probably be made aware if any future president should be sworn in with, say, the Sermon on the Mount open before him.
God forbid that, too.
And yet, even here, we observe a strange paradox. A Jewish authority says, the Jew is a paradox. He is at once an idealist and a materialist. He is parsimonious and extravagant. He is courageous and cowardly. He is modest and vulgar. He is persistent and yielding. He is peaceful and warlike, and so on. And though the Jew opposes the Bible in the schools, he never misses a chance to put it there with the Jewish trademark. He quotes the Psalms. We wrote them. He quotes Isaiah. We Jews did that. Actually, the Psalms are of Egyptian origin. So I read, anyway.
So you say, yeah.
I read that somewhere.
Well.
Most people sit open-mouthed at these glorious authors of Scripture and do not know how to answer. It is time the churches began to learn what to say to the Jewish taunts. We gave you your God. We gave you your Bible. We gave you your Savior. Perhaps
well,
it is
you
also...
know, but it's the anti-Christians today, you know, amongst those like yourself, Patty, who say this. I mean, you don't, you're not bad about it. You don't go around saying that. But many of them do, you know. They're the ones who taunt the Christians and hate and talk so hatefully about Christianity, far worse than the Jews do. So you could say they're doing the Jews' work. They're doing the job of the Jews. I think so. But anyway, you know.
Well, actually, if you get into some arguments with Christians about Jews, it will take no time at all for these Christians to say, Jesus was a Jew.
Well, now you're like changing. Well, I don't know. That's one thing. But, you know, they're saying here, you know, they don't all emphasize that. And obviously Henry Ford and his writers didn't. And they're pointing out that this is something that the Jews want to take credit for. That's where this came from, that Jesus was a Jew.
Well, I think actually that the Reform Judaism started this line about Jesus being a Jew and all this stuff. Orthodox Jews will say absolutely not, I think. Christians today, in general, or a great many of them, they've been pretty much trained to say Jesus was a Jew.
Well, yeah, I know that. I know. But, you know, we're talking about how all these things came about and so on. So, well, it's not just what people are doing today. You know, a lot of this stuff today is new. But they didn't used to say that. They didn't. But that's all been engineered by the Jews. They're working on both sides. They're working on all sides.
Any Christian who will say Jesus was a Jew is a member of a Jew-worshipping cult, you know, because that's what he believes.
Well, they say he was born a Jew, but he changed and became, you know, the representative of Christianity. So they're not saying that they're worshipping a Jew. That's not what they're saying. Oh, that's what it's turned into.
Effectively, they are saying that.
Well,
in any case, the literature which the Jews wrongfully claim as their own production is rather far distant in time to justify its being used as a mantle of glory for the political rabbis, the discredited theatrical and movie magnates, and the violent penmen of the Jewish press. Rather too distant in time, we, the race that confronts the Jews, have done somewhat more recent work, for example, the Declaration of Independence and the Emancipation Proclamation, not to mention the Psalms and pronouncements of the great American prophets that have lifted up the world. I don't really want to brag about the Declaration of Independence or the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah.
So the Jew is very willing that the Bible should be in the schools, provided it is not what he calls the Christian Bible. Listen to this. Hebrew is to be taught in the Chicago high schools. Students who include this language in their course are to receive the credit now allowed for the study of other classical languages. Of infinite value in the training of the mind are the wonderful narratives of Genesis, and boys and girls will find the history of Israel under the Judges much more appealing than Caesar's Bridge over the Rhine.
Isn't that amazing? I wonder who said that. You know, they got these quotes here.
Gotta be some Jew.
Yeah, some of the newspapers or something. I don't know. Well, there you are, see? And they managed to get away with some of this.
Could be some Christian fanatic, too, though. You can't tell for sure. The people of New Jersey thought so, too. They believed that a reading from this ancient book every day would mean much to the general culture of the pupils. But what did the paper just quoted say about it? It called the cultivated Bible appreciators of New Jersey soul-snatching enthusiasts and raised a mighty yell about the forcible conversion of Jewish children. Although it was provided that Jewish or any other children should be excused from the reading if desired. Another mighty yell about excusing the children, all on account of the tyranny of reading the Christian Bible in the schools. Regardless of the fact... Shoot.
Computer's yeah, that's back. Right.
Regardless of the fact, which every public school teacher knows, that no class of children is oftener out of school for religious reasons than are the Jews. Truly, these people are a paradox. They are not fair. They are constituted so that they cannot see the other side of anything. For a time, they actually do convince the secularists. Page is flipped on me.
That everything
public should be secularized down to the last notch of atheistic demand. Non-Jews are fair. They are willing to see the other people's point of view. When it was said to us that the Merchant of Venice was a cruelty upon Jewish school pupils, we said, without investigation, out with the merchant then. We discovered later that the Jewish children liked and appreciated that play better than any other group. Brander Matthews helped us discover that.
Yeah, well, who cares what the Jewish children like? I don't. But anyway, you know, they make this point. Oh, well.
Yeah. But anyway. And so, when they said, reading the Bible is sheer proselytizing, it isn't fair, the non-Jew, who wanted to prove that he is fair, and unprejudiced above all things, a weakness the Jews know how to exploit, said, well then, out goes the Bible. And it went out. Very well, what next? You must abolish Christmas too. You must not keep Easter. The Jews don't like it. It is anti-Semitic to observe Good Friday. In other words, to please the sensitive Jewish natures, we must eradicate from Christian civilization all that is Christian in it.
Well, Hattie, we're about out of time here. We've got a little bit left. But, you know, the next chapter is even longer than this one. It's almost 5,000 words. So it's going to be probably about right to do the two chapters on three different occasions. So I think we'll just stop here and then we'll pick it up. Let me put in my big red stop word, and we'll pick it up next week here and then continue on into the next chapter, which is very similar. In fact, they say at the end of this one that this subject is so big, religious persecution, that they've had to write two chapters on it. And and so it's all tied in together. So, all right, last word?
Well, I think this is a good stopping point.
All right, well, we had to... So we'll see you next week, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening.
Rage, rage, I'm breaking up drinks all night long.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.